Hey, Truck Roy here. We're on the Riding Shotgun Show, and I have Horace back with us, and we just had Horace on the show recently, and it's always a pleasure. I mean, the listeners love having you on here. It's interesting conversation, and I love your show. I just began to listen to a little bit of number 23, and it's real enlightening. I always listen to a section, and then I'll pause, and I'll think about it, and I'll go back and listen to it again, and it entertains and informs at the same time. Welcome back on here, Horace.
Well, thank you for having me back on.
What are you up to today? What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I wanted to add something to what we just talked about in the previous show, and that is talking about the Russian, German, Italian access.
Right.
The access forming. One of the important things for me to do early on in the first show was to make sure that when you're thinking all hope is lost, all hope is never lost, that you have options. And, of course, if I say that, I need to back it up with some information, and that's what I'm doing. I'm consistently putting healthy thoughts and healthy food in front of you that you can easily do research on. It's what right in front of your nose, but if you're thinking all hope is lost or in some kind of fear-based consensus trance, and all hope is lost is the ultimate, well, we need to get ourselves out of that.
I agree.
That's one of the reasons I told you about that, so you could understand that you're a valuable asset, that all hope will never be lost for you, to break that out, because our enemy does something very good. They do fear-based consensus trances. They lock you down in that. You know, all hope may be lost in your neighborhood today, but all hope is never lost when you can get on a plane and leave.
Well,
that's what I want you to know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know where you're going with this, Horace, but I was thinking about that yesterday, and I think a little bit today too. I might be a strange guy because I go around all day pondering different white nationalist ideas. But I was thinking about that, about white people taking off and flying over to Russia or somewhere, some white nation that wants white people, and you know, doing kind of a brain drain on the multicultural society. And you know, I've always been America first. I love America. I'm a mix of a whole bunch of European nationalities, and so I consider myself American by blood, you know, because that's about the only thing I can say I am. And I love this nation. My ancestors have been here since the very beginning, and I just love America. But after listening to you on that, you know, that is a good last resort option, you know, for to go somewhere where you know, we're wanted.
Well, that's true. What I'm doing is making sure that you know all hope is not lost simply because of what's going on right in front of your face.
Right.
And I'm doing that not just in some pie in the eye conversation.
Pie in the sky.
Pie in the sky, conversation. I'm giving you facts. I'm giving you information.
Right.
Stuff that you may doubt when I first say it, but you're going to do it. You're going to do research. You're going to see it coming right at you.
That's true, man. I am a cynical guy, and I doubt you occasionally. And then I start thinking about it. I go, you know what? I think Horace is right on that.
You will not all hope, all else will not be equal, but I'm saying all else being equal. You see, we've been expanding for hundreds and hundreds of years. That's just, you know, when you expand for hundreds and hundreds of years, you generally consolidate. The reason we've never consolidated is because we do technology and we do abundance so well. We can dominate all these different areas. And just sit across the top of the planet. But under normal conditions, we would go into some kind of a consolidation after expanding for hundreds and hundreds of years all over the globe.
Right.
We're all over Australia. We control these huge tracts of land. And normally, that's the kind of what you see is what you get under normal circumstances. This will not be normal. But I'm trying to give you healthy food so you think healthy, positive thoughts. And that's something every rabbit can research. It's very simple stuff. I'm giving you stuff going on right in front of you. But I think it's important to break out of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, thinking healthy thoughts is so important because I think on a gut level we all know when we're under a fear-based trance. I mean, we may not know what the problem is, but we know that we're sick somehow. And I can remember when I lived in Southern California as a youth, and you know, I did at that time. I was not explicitly racial. I mean, I did hang out with some people who were, I guess, kind of the lowest level sort of white nationalist folks. But I you know, some of that was based in kind of criminal activity and things like that. So it wasn't a clear understanding of the ideology, and I knew that there was things wrong with what those guys were doing. But I knew that multiculturalism was not the answer too. And you know, even before that, even before I really understood race, there was something about these liberal concepts when they'd make their way into my church or into my, you know, schooling or things I saw on TV that on a gut level they made me feel sick. And I didn't know what was wrong with them. At that time, I didn't know the ideology. I didn't know what the brainwashing that was occurring, but I knew something was wrong. And by the same token, when we get a dose of some real positive racial thinking, suddenly something, it's like the veil's been taken off your eyes. All of a sudden, a new clarity comes into your life, and you're like, this is real. And at least that's how it was for me, and that's why I've never been able to turn away from the truth of racial reality since I was first exposed to it.
I think, you know, once you get hit with the topic I'm talking about in 24 exclusively. Those that have listened to my show realize that the first 12 are a set, the second 12 are a set, and everything builds on one another. It is unique in that regard, but the 24th show will be the most important show I've done. It talks about a serious question. And that question is a racial question. And maybe I'll go into that a little bit toward the end here. But that's the question the mantra invokes. That's the question the mantra invokes in a white rabbit from a deep subconscious level. It's the iron question. It's an unmovable question. And that's kind of a big teaser, I know, but it's a question that every single white rabbit on the planet, every one of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe must answer. It is almost a question we will always be asked. It is a question we must always answer. It's a choice we must make. We've always had to make the choice. We're the only rabbit that must choose to be white rabbits.
Right. Well, you know, I have some guesses of what that question might be, but I'm not going to make one right now because I know you're not going to answer me anyway. But I've listened to your
show. I'm going to go into this. I will go into it in a little bit.
Teaser. You know, it's a good way for people to because I want to tune into your next show and find out what it is, because the only reason I might have an idea of what the question is because I've listened to your previous 23 shows. But, you know.
Well,
when, you know, a lot of the truths that you put out there, you know, are things that have come from Bob Whitaker or things you've come to yourself, but they're truths that you don't stumble into a lot of other places. Some of the metaphors and examples you use have been very, very enlightening for me. And I can remember just talking to you. I don't know if I was just talking to you on the phone or I was listening to one of your shows, and you made the comment to me, "You a white rabbit, me a white rabbit." And I'll tell you what, that is the simplest darn thing out there, but it is so true, man. I mean, when it comes to these ideological divisions or, you know, religious differences we might have with one another, when, as you put it, if we're all on the bus together and there's a whole bunch of Negroes on the bus and we're 10% of the population, you a white rabbit, me a white rabbit, it doesn't really matter, you know, our different intellectual disagreements, you know. We've got more in common than you know, race is real. Race is real.
Very much real. A lot of the differences in ideology that have driven white nationalism up to this point in time are really going to be irrelevant for the future, simply because we're becoming one big tribe. We are really becoming one big tribe. The old separations of nationalism have now fallen away.
Well, for right now, and I got to tell you, Horace, I'm not convinced that it'll stay that way. I think that it could be that we go back to our infighting, our old nationalistic tendencies at some point in the future. I think this is kind of a golden moment right now where we're all facing the same problem and we may unite together. But beyond that, despite our battles with each other, you know, France fighting England or England fighting France or England fighting Germany, despite all these battles we've had between each other, we've always had far more in common with each other than we have had with any non-whites. And I can remember when I was driving truck and I was talking to one of my students on the truck, and we were talking about, you know, ideas of social justice and race and things like this. And they were talking about, you know, are white people good or, you know, I mean, do we have a right to our existence? Basically, that's what it broke down to, you know, and how are we different from other races? And isn't race just a social construct and things like this? And I looked to the other guy in my truck and I said, you know what? Blacks don't have these conversations. They're discussing these things in their homes.
Yes, that's how real race is.
That's how real race is. Exactly.
It is so real. it is so real that right now in storm fronts, you're going to have little white rabbits saying we're just a social construct, and you'll have little white rabbits arguing that we are not just a social construct.
Right.
You will not see boards in China arguing that they're a social construct. You will not see boards in Africa where little black rabbits argue back and forth about being a social construct. Only white rabbits do this. Only white rabbits question their existence. That's how real it is. And it is going to go in a topic. It's going to go in an area. And we are going to find out exactly how real it is very shortly. And it has nothing to do with swords and bullets or anything like that. But race is very, very real.
It is. It is, man. I'm looking forward to this 24. I'm interested in what you're going to say on this.
Well, everything's been building into this question. And let me give you an example of what I've done in the show. What I've done in the show, and I don't know exactly when this is going to be playing on Stormfront, but what I've done on the show is set you up for things coming down. For instance, coming down the pipeline. When I first talked about Joseph P. Farrell, when I first talked about some of the facts of World War II, the facts that are coming out, most rabbits are very skeptical. They doubt that. Truck Roy is one such rabbit.
I am.
For instance, if I were to give you facts, and these facts were given to me, and these facts will be undisputable someday. Adolf Hitler did not commit suicide in the Fuhrer bunker, and neither did Eva Braun with him. Martin Bormann did not die in Berlin in 1945. The skull in the Kremlin is that of a young woman. OSS CIA records tell where Hitler was living post-war. OSS CIA records tell where Bormann was living post-war. SS veterans met on the 20th of April every year until the late 1990s for a birthday celebration in Chile. Now, if I were to tell you that, most people would say, well, Horace, where'd you get that from? Where's that official line of information coming from? And I've talked about this. I talked about Joseph P. Farrell. I've talked about shark hunters. But the reason I'm talking about that months ago is because of something that's happening on January 6th. On January 6th, the president of Shark Hunters, which is an actual historical society, they help run and preserve U-boat history as well as World War II submarine history and World War II history in general. They help run they're somewhat attached to the U-boat museum in Germany. On January 6th, January 6th, 2010, the opening show for of all things, Ghost Hunters International is going to have Mr. Cooper on there, and he's going to be the featured historian on that show. Not for any supernatural information, but factual historical information regarding Adolf Hitler living in years after the end of the war, and guess where it's filmed? South America.
Mm-hmm.
So these are Cordoba Province, Argentina. And specifically, these are things I know about. I've known that he was filming something for TV. I thought it would be the National Geographic or History Channel. But this is coming out on a sci-fi channel, which is interesting in itself. But that's the type of information I'm giving you, stuff that is radical. I understand it's radical, but you're going to be watching it.
Yeah, and, you're right. I am a cynic on a lot of this stuff, but I also see overarching truths in a lot of what you're saying. I mean, I think that I don't know that all those facts are 100% correct on some, Joseph P. Farrell's type stuff, but I do believe that the overall ideas underlying it are true, and some of them are blatantly true. Some of them have already been put out there in the history books, and we know some of the amazing technology that the Germans came up with as far as, the stealth technology and some of the jet engines and things like that. But beyond that, I don't know. However, I do know the idea that we have a different way of thinking about things, which you put out there, that some science is only accessible from a certain viewpoint. I think that's accurate. And there's a lot of overarching themes, and that's what intrigues me about this stuff. Now, the idea that this is going to come out on the Sci-Fi Channel, now, you always see the glass half full. Now, if a person saw the glass half empty, they might say that's a way to discredit this stuff or whatever. But I am leaning...
When I first heard they were filming something for cable television, when Harry Cooper, he's a big deal. He's going to be the historian for World War II, the go-to historian. If you read Escape from the Bunker, you're going to be reading what your neighbors will be reading in their history books a decade from now. I'm just being serious with you.
Well, I know that history books are going to be completely different. I have, right. There's no doubt in my mind that 100 years from now, the Hitler in our history books is going to be unrecognizable to the Hitler of the historical figure 100 years from
now. Right, but what I'm trying to do is give you heads up on information coming down the pipeline so it won't just knock you out. Mm-hmm. But the reason they're going, I couldn't figure out why they did this. You know, is the ghost of Hitler going to come out and say, 1488, rabbits?
Yeah.
You know, I'm back. I don't know where they're going with this. I can't wait to see it. But if you're going to start hitting people with information as groundbreaking as the stuff I read off the facts from a historical society called Shark Hunters that most people don't even know exists. It has 8,000 global members. And, you know, Ronald Reagan's on the front page of their website. But if you're going to start hitting rabbits with information like that, well, having it on a Ghost Hunters International that's looking at an old Nazi hotel in Cordoba, Argentina, have him on there to discuss that. That's an interesting channel because it's only white rabbits that watch a sci-fi channel. It's only white rabbits that watch the National Geographic channel. It's an interesting demographic. I didn't know how they were ever going to start revealing this information. I revealed it straight up. It's pretty interesting because I just talked to racial channels, obviously. But it kind of surprised me that they were taking this angle, but that is very creative of some wide sky operatives out in Hollywood of putting it down a channel like this because you got to open the conversation somewhere. Opening up on a history channel would blow minds. But putting it down this type of channel in Ghost Hunters International, featuring him as a historical at an actual Nazi hotel in Argentina, is pretty interesting. I can't wait to watch it. It should be interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I don't even like Ghost Hunters International, but I'm giving you information that I talked about months ago, and everyone doubts this type of stuff, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, you know, there's real cynical, literal like people like myself and other people out there who we don't even want the facts that we know to be tainted by being put in conjunction with something like ghosts or something like that. But, you know, I also know that it is powerful, and as you mentioned, you know, the Jews really have a lock on Hollywood, and you're not going to be able to put straight, truthful propaganda out there. You've got to find a creative angle to come in on it. And the other thing is that it appeals to people's imagination. You know, I think, yeah, I first read this or heard this post on your show. It was a post by Bob Whitaker talking about historical fiction. And he was talking about how in some of these historical fiction books, they're more heavily critiqued, and they have to work harder to get their facts right because they have hundreds of thousands of readers that are reading this stuff and will call them on any fact that they get wrong, whereas the guys that read the textbooks never get vetted, and if they get something wrong or inaccurate, they really don't have – there's no feedback mechanism to get that repaired. And so they come up with some very academic, abstract and inaccurate conclusions, whereas under the guise of historical fiction, we may find more truth than under the than in the quote unquote textbooks.
Well, as an American, we always thought Christopher Columbus discovered the Americas, but yet they're doing 2 and 3 hour specials on the Teutonic Knights or the Knights Templar and how they most likely founded America. They're putting the meme out there. They're planning the ideals. They're coming back to it. And this idea that Hitler didn't die is now going to come out mainstream news. It should tell you something. But I've tried to give listeners a head up on things coming down the pipeline because nothing from World War II has ever been reconciled. And everything that's happened to us from World War II has to do with World War II. It's never been reconciled and it's going to be reconciled. But I'm just trying to give my listeners heads up on what's coming. Even if they don't believe it now, I know you will believe it.
right.
Because I don't believe anything until I see official channels. But once I see an official channel that's a committed historian go on TV, I know that most of the other things they said are going to be true as well. That's just the way it goes. But like with the Templar Knights founding America, I would have never believed that. But there has to be some smoke there.
Well, I still don't know that I believe that. I mean, I don't know. I honestly have to say I don't know. Because like you said, if you had told me 50 years ago, if I'd been around 50 years ago and you would have described the internet to me, I would have thought you were insane and that nothing such a thing couldn't have been built. You know, that was science fiction. Obviously, it exists here today. It's comfortable. It's normal. It's not shocking at all. So, you know, I don't know what the history books are going to say, 50 years from now or what the science is going to be. But I will tell you this, the way things have been presented in our textbooks are profoundly anti-white, and the reality of the world is that the modern world that we live in is a white invention. I mean, whether you're talking about microwaves or internal combustion engines or airplanes or anything, we built it, we invented it. If it weren't hadn't been for us, you know, the whole world would be basically in the third world still. So it is interesting, and there is nothing that's impossible once we set our minds to it.
No doubt about it, but the point I'm trying to make is that most of your history that you think is known is now up for grabs. When you see something like that, that's what it's telling you. Let me give you an example. Let's jump out of the box. Let me give you something. When you see something come down an official channel like that, or in an unofficial channel in an odd way, in a unique program that I don't even like, from a historical perspective, you got to say what's someone trying to tell you.
Right.
And most of my listeners have a heads up to this. Even if they don't believe it, they're going to have a heads up. They're going to say, well, Horace talked about that a little bit.
Right.
But there's another thing that I talked about, and we had talked about Russia in the previous one. There was an episode in London where Vladimir Putin, was accused of killing a rabbit. They were accused of poisoning a rabbit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Along the line. And don't get me talking Russian today, because I may not be able to speak it. You know, I'm trying to learn German here, and crossing over into Russia or Russian names becomes impossible for me. But anyways, and Levadinko or whatever his name is, but that they were accusing Putin, they were accusing the Russians of slow poisoning. Pretty cruel thing to do.
Radiation
poisoning. Nonetheless, poisoning him, and he did die. But if someone in London is telling you that Putin can walk in and poison a rabbit and they can't do anything about it, what does that tell you about the people running things?
Yeah.
How much power do they really have? On the other hand, if he didn't do it and they were just setting up problem, reaction, solution to go to war, and the only thing they can do is do some BS little deal in Georgia, well, what does that tell you? Either way you look at it, they're telling you something.
Yeah.
So when you see these things come out, you have to really look at it and analyze it. And that's generally what I do on my particular program, from a unique perspective, from things that, you know, a traditional white nationalist channel talks about some obvious things regarding crime and whatnot. I talk about what is obvious, but maybe not obvious to a white rabbit, that type of thing.
Well, you know, it's true that I think sometimes we can try to rationalize things that should not be rationalized. I mean, like, you can have neocons right now, or just leftists, who still can try to rationalize that this stuff can be salvageable, that their cause right now can be salvaged by maybe going to war with Iran or whatever. But, you know, if you sit back and you look at things objectively, they're played out. I mean, they are played out. One of the reasons why is because the people who are in power in the United States, and as you put it, in Anglosphere, which would be England and Australia as well, these folks are revolutionaries. They are they're rebellion. They're permanent revolutionaries, like communists. They're in constant rebellion against everything, and yet now they have the power, which makes them the establishment, and that's a very uncomfortable place for a revolutionary to be in. And go ahead.
Yes, it is. But what you have to understand is that someone's telling you, whether it be a radically different historical view that shows up on sci-fi that I've told you about, or something radically different that happens in London. What someone's telling you is that someone's losing power.
Right.
Very quickly eroding. Their power is very quickly eroding. That's why a consistent message comes into play and all that other kind of good stuff.
Right, and when things start to break down, it's not on a planned linear path. I mean, when things start to fall apart, there's no plan for falling apart. Nobody plans to self-destruct. And so when we see our opposition doing this, you're going to see a lot of mixed messages coming out. I mean, you know, for example, we might say, well, the Jews control Hollywood, they control the media. Why would they let any sort of truth out on their channels or anything that could be pro-white or anything like your program that you're seeing here? It's not surprising at all, actually. I can guarantee you that as the tide begins to turn our way, you're going to see all kinds of Jews turning against their own people, touting our side, etc. Because nobody plans for things to fall apart. And as they do, the rats start fighting and eating each other on that ship as it's going down.
Yeah, what has happened is that as we're stretched out over this top of the planet, we're not a third of the world, we're only 10% and falling. And as that happens, it isolates anyone that is not really pro-white. It makes them look foolish because you have to have ethnic interests defend it, and that type of thing. You have to have someone speaking up for you because everyone else has someone speaking up for them. But what it tells you is that someone's losing money, but someone's losing power. But you know, what you've seen right in front of your face is the late liberals, and they're totally what I call late liberals, post-World War II, the Chris Matthews on MSNBC, so on and so forth. What they are doing
self-hating
is
white rabbits.
The self-hating, the pink rabbits.
Yeah.
And what they are doing is they are self-destructing in front of everyone's face. This last episode where global warming, it was like a total lie peddled by London. A total lie. I mean, and then they're lying about lying. It just becomes so outrageous and so fantastical. They won't ever admit they're wrong, but now nature is going to force them to admit they're wrong on a few issues. So it should be interesting. What our enemy is doing is our enemy is isolated. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, are isolated. They know that they now have a problem. That problem is going to get a reaction. That reaction is going to have a solution. What they will do as this reaction grows is into that what they are doing is legitimizing an opposition that isn't really an opposition. They'll write a report about radical Alex Jones, and how dangerous he is. And then people say, well, the ADL says he's dangerous, so he must be good. Or they'll say, Glenn Beck's such a radical, and he's against our agenda, so on and so forth. What they're doing is trying to control reactions so that when the solution comes, it won't be really a solution. It'll be another form. It'll be always programmed toward our genocide, that type of thing. But that's something I'm watching right this minute.
Well, yeah, because, you know, back when they were more of the insurgents and we still had a remnant of something to defend, they could demonize somebody. They could go after somebody, and it might be hip or cool. But once you become the establishment, when you go after somebody, it just makes them seem more popular. It's that negative conditioning thing. It's the bully beating up on the underdog. And you talked about that negative conditioning earlier in one of your shows.
Yeah, totally. What they're doing is doing what you never want to do on White Rabbit. You never want to sit there and call yourself a chosen rabbit and that you're God's perfect rabbit. And you're sitting in the middle of the planet wailing on Palestinian rabbits. You're running around the United States with an ADL office everywhere harassing rabbits. I mean, and only white rabbits, you know, are faced with this. The Christian rabbits always get on the back of the Anti-Defamation League. But what the Christian rabbits miss, and they miss us totally, the Anti-Defamation League has never once, to my knowledge, attacked the cross in Latin America. They've never once attacked Southeast Asian Christians. There's a huge growing Christian population in Southeast Asia. They never once attacked the outrageous and growing Christian population in Africa. The only Christians that ADL attacks are Indo-European rabbits.
White rabbits.
That's it.
White
That's
rabbits.
It. That's all they attack. They attack white rabbits. You know, they're not attacking Christians.
No, they're attacking the race.
There you go. And they're always talking about this race problem. But that race problem doesn't exist anywhere other than white children's homes, white children's schools, white children's churches. And the solution to this race problem is all some kind of forced integration or some kind of, social engineered genocide of some level of white rabbits. So it's always a clear and consistent targeting. I mean, it's too impossible to ignore now.
Right. And genocide is a big thing. It's a lot different than going after an ideology. It's a lot different than going after a class of people. You know, it's a lot different than deciding that you want to eliminate crime in your town. When you talk about erasing an entire race or culture, that is huge. And that's why our position as white nationalists, our position as people who would like to survive, it's not a linear program. I mean, there's so many aspects to it. I mean, that's why you and I can sit. You can sit on your show, Horace, or I can sit on my show, and we can talk all day, every day about this struggle and never hit the same stuff because we're talking about saving an entire race, an entire Western culture. And our enemy is trying to destroy an entire race, an entire Western culture. And that's one of the reasons why they'll never be able to do it. I mean, you could poison us for a little while, but we're too deep. This is not a football game. This is not where you're going to score, you know, run up a score and the game's over and you hand the trophy to another guy. This is genocide, which goes down to, every aspect of our society must be erased for them to be able to do this. And as long as there's something left, we will recover. And in fact, by poisoning us, by wounding us a little bit, they've just cut their own throats. You know, right before I came on this program, Horace, I was sitting here and I was talking to somebody, and I haven't listened to Screwdriver in a long time or listened to Saga covering Screwdriver in a long time, but we were sitting here and we were listening to music, and it got me thinking. It's been, I think, 1993, Ian Stewart died. And I'm sure at that time the leftists, he used to fight leftists in the streets. I mean, those guys would go at it like crazy over there in England. I mean, he had bottles broken over his head, go out on stage, stitched up, and I mean, he broke some heads himself too. But, you know, here's a guy who they thought was a big, bad guy because he wrote great lyrics for our side. He mobilized and inspired a lot of people. And he died in 1993. And you know what? That guy is more popular today than ever. That's the thing. Negative conditioning works that way. If they make a martyr out of somebody of ours, it backfires against them.
Oh, sure. Negative conditioning is a program I did, number 15, and you should listen to them in order to get up to it, but it's one that's, I believe it's number 15. It is an extremely unique show. I don't think any of the listeners have ever heard anything quite like it, ever been put on MP3 available to the public. It is something uniquely White Rabbit-ish. It would have been the Victorian England. You see, where this first came out was a philosopher named Foucault. And Foucault wrote about this in regards to sex in Victorian England. In Victorian England, sex was always hush-hush. And at first it was self-reinforcing. Then the next thing you know, we know now there's all kinds of hanky-panky going on. But by making it hush-hush, by having these hang-ups with sex in Victorian England, what actually brought it to the forefront of your minds.
Right, and by comparison, what we've done today about race, you can't talk about race if you're white. I mean, I think that's got to be even bigger than the Victorian thing on sex.
Oh, I went into this. I went into the Holy Trinity coming out of World War II, and that's why I always come back to World War II, because it hasn't been reconciled. That Hitler rabbit's an evil rabbit. That Hitler rabbit's the devil rabbit. That Hitler rabbit's going to get you. it doesn't end the negative conditioning coming out of World War II. It doesn't matter whether it's – or in negative conditioning, need not be negative. You know, Jew rabbits is wonderful. Jew rabbits, God's chosen rabbit.
Right.
Jew rabbits
permanent
never do
victims.
Anything wrong. Jew rabbits never lie. Jew rabbits never steal. Jew rabbits are incapable of imperfection. You know, you get into these. If you listen to 15, and I spent a long time on it, you'll be pretty convinced it's something unique we do. Why do we do it? Why do your neighbors think they're racist? Why did our ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell? I mean, we go for it naturally. No other rabbit negatively conditions. We negatively condition so much so that when you put it in place, you can't stop it.
Right.
And it is a fascinating subject, and we'll see where it's all going, but that is something I talk about. I try to talk about things unique that you're not going to hear anywhere else.
Well, and you know, I agree that World War II is a seminal event in our history, and it is unreconciled still, because coming out of World War II, we have things that are unnatural, attitudes that are unnatural, things that are They're causes that are going to have effects. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop on a lot of this stuff. And I talked to a couple real smart people in white nationalism. You're one of them, Horace, but sometimes I get my conversations confused, so I'm not sure if I had this conversation with you or not. But I was talking to somebody recently, and we were talking about the dualism that has come out of the Jew propaganda post-World War II. And here's what I mean by that. They'll come out with a movie and they'll say that what was this movie that came out? You talked about in your show with the savage Jews that are attacking and scalping Nazis or something like that.
That is the first time I've ever seen a poor portrayal, a really negative portrayal of Jews regarding World War II, and that's Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds. And I haven't seen
it. It is not good for the Jews. I do a review, the Trevor Lynch review for the Occidental Quarterly, because it is a wide sky review. It's how I view things. It's how I view propaganda. Know a little bit about this.
Right. I actually read the same review earlier before I heard your show, and it is very interesting. But even prior to that, I mean, even if you go back to the traditional, you know, evil Nazis, poor victim Jews type movies out there, you know, it puts this interesting question in the minds of every white viewer out there, and it's probably a subconscious question. It's probably not something they verbalize, but
sure.
It goes like this: Jews are victims. White people are Aryan Nazis, okay?
Sure.
And Aryan Nazis want to kill Jews and stick them in ovens, okay?
Sure. Now, the New Testament is anti-Semitic. You've heard it from the ADL.
Right.
All Christians are Nazi rabbits. The New Testament is anti-Semitic. You know, Jesus wasn't, so on, so forth, etc. It's overwhelming.
Right. And so at some point, subconsciously, when any white person watches one of these litany of movies that make Jews out to be victims of the evil white person, it's, you know, one of our core things that we have to do is establish where we stand on an issue. We have to establish our identity. I read a thing about Sam Dixon recently, I think, and he was talking about that old Greek saying that by that philosopher that says know thyself. But he says, and really the literal interpretation is know who you are, and basically know where you stand. And that is the most, you know, pressing question on us is, who are we? Where do we stand on everything? And when somebody sits and watches one of these Jewish propaganda movies, and they see, okay, evil German Aryan white people and poor victim Jews, we have to decide which side of those are we on, okay? And if you have a German last name, or even if you don't, when you look up at that movie, you're going to say, I'm a bad guy. I'm a bad guy. Now, or I'm on the bad guy's side. You know, subconsciously, you may not really think that you're an evil person, but you're thinking, all right, you've got two sides here. You got the Jewish side, and you got the white side. Now, I'm not Jewish, so I have to be on the white side. So what do my people do? We kill Jews. And, of course, that may not be entirely accurate. I don't know how accurate the numbers on the Holocaust are. But even if the Holocaust is a complete fabrication, the idea out there that the Jews have been putting into everybody's mind that you are bad, you are a Nazi, and you kill Jews, obviously that's negative conditioning. But when you do it for that long, you better be careful about what kind of fire you're starting.
Well, there's no doubt about that. It is massive negative conditioning. You see, the only rabbits in the history of the world that have ever been nice to Jews, the Muslims had a way to treat them. They wiped them out. Yeah, the Prophet Muhammad wiped them out, the Qadarshi Jews and whatnot. He exterminated them. Our relationship with them has always revolved around negative conditioning. And there is nothing negative on the Jews, period. There's nothing negative on them. They don't do anything wrong. How can you be God? How can you be one low perfect rabbit? It is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
And the only ones that have ever believed anything nice about the Jews are the white rabbits.
Yeah.
Who else thinks nice things about African rabbits? White rabbits will believe anything. We're the fantasy rabbits. It's true.
Yeah. But it's our greatest strength too. So I mean, it's not something you want to get rid of. But
it's yin for yang. But it is an interesting. Our relationship with the Hebrews has always revolved around negative conditioning. They come into a country, they say they're this and that, then they get to the top, and then all of a sudden we realize they're not what they're telling us, and then it blows up.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a backlash.
There's a backlash, but we don't wipe them out. It just goes on another level, another place. World War II, it came to a head. Negative conditioning came to a head, and it basically terrified some different parties.
On one of your shows, you made a point on this that I keep repeating and using over and over again, which is that Hitler put the voodoo snafu on the Jews. Now, I'm not a giant Hitler fan. I mean, there's things I like about the guy, things I don't. But you're entirely right on this point. And it, again, it was one of those moments in your show where I was like, it was kind of an epiphany for me. And because you explained that, you know, the Jews will generally ride us to our heights. And, you know, if there's a war going on, they'll fund both sides of an ethnic conflict. And then whatever side wins, they'll ride that side to, you know, whatever heights that society can go to. So, like, right now, there is something that's beyond my control, beyond your control, beyond David Duke's control, beyond anybody's control, which is that we're coming back around again. The white people have had enough negative conditioning, and we've had the perfect mix of a little bit of truth leaking out over the internet, that there's something that's building up here. Now, usually the Jews could ride this. You know, white people are starting to get sick of Mexicans fleeing into their nation. They're starting to get sick of basically this genocide that's going on against white people, not just in America, but all over. So we're coming back. It's not real visible yet, but the roots of it underground, there's a pulse, there's a feel, there's an energy coming back. Now, usually the Jews could ride this. As we came back, they could ride our successes, they could fund both sides of any ethnic conflicts we got into, and then they could ride us to victory all over the world and make lots and lots of money off of it. But, as you said, Hitler put the voodoo snafu on the Jews because of Hitler's policies and Hitler's attitudes towards the Jews. The Jews threw in against us. They decided to side with the blacks. They decided to side with feminism, communism, any ideology that could break down our traditions and white Western culture. They sided with it. They firmly staked themselves to an anti-white position. And now they can't get away with it. They can't get away from it. They can't side with us. There's some Jews that are trying. There are Jews that are trying to get on our side right now. But it's too late. They have staked themselves out against us, and they've cut their own throats.
Yes, basically. What happened after World War II is that some things happened in World War II, and then afterwards it became quite obvious that the people, certain parties at the top of Anglosphere, and specifically the Hebrew elites, it's pretty much unavoidable that they took the gloves off and tried to asymmetrically attack us in every way, shape, manner, or form. I mean, they tried to wipe us off the planet. There can be no question about it. The statements they made on the record, you know, Stormfront and some of the parties involved with Stormfront, there is a huge industry in white nationalism just simply quoting Hebrews way even back prior to World War II and what they plan on doing Western civilization, creating a blended humanity here and only here. But afterwards, they took the gloves off. And, I mean, when you get into Abe Foxy Foxman, they just made their whole careers out of trying to wail on white rabbits. It's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And they've staked themselves to that position. Bibi Netanyahu, believe it or not, in Israel, the Israeli can be a little bit different. You know, he wanted to talk to white nationalists in Europe and whatnot, but they just wouldn't allow it for some reason. So they have staked themselves. They have staked themselves to the opposite side of our iron question, and that is something I guess I should start heading into.
Yeah, we've got about 15, 20 minutes left on the show here. But yeah, they really have staked themselves out against us, and I don't doubt that they'll try to start moving our way here in the future, but the record is too clear and there's too many Jewish leaders on the record coming out against us.
Yeah, they've basically you know, the pink rabbits, that the pink rabbits are very conflict oriented. They're what you see is what you get. You know them as the Hebrews. There are pink jackrabbits, and I don't know a lot about them other than they look just like us and they always act like lone rangers, but they're here to lead us to our dooms. I don't know a lot about them, but I'm going to talk about them a little bit. We don't really care. We put them all in one category. If you look like us and have no loyalty to us, it doesn't matter whether it's Judaism or capitalism. You've got to go from position of power because we got to support ourselves. And if we don't, it causes whole problems on the planet. It causes problems across the planet, believe it or not. When we don't have a home, it causes huge, huge complications. When our ethnic interests aren't supported, it causes huge complications. But this all goes back to World War II and reconciling everything that happened. And I know the direction. I just don't know how it's going to be done. But it's starting to happen.
It is. It is, and it's going to be very interesting to watch it happen. I mean, I'm a white rabbit. I don't like conflict, and I hate to see it. But sometimes it's unavoidable, and there are, you know, for every action, there's a reaction. And whenever something gets unnatural, it gets out of whack, it has to be brought back. That pendulum has to swing back. And that's what we're seeing right now. I mean, in some places more than others. Obviously, in Europe, it's starting to swing back more. In Russia, there's definitely – I mean, Russia learned its lessons a little quicker than everybody else because they had to deal with direct genocide. I'm talking about physically putting people in concentration camps and killing them via many Jewish Bolsheviks and stuff of the last century. And they learned this generation after generation. They learned this lesson very, very well. So they're a little bit ahead of the curve. But, luckily we didn't have that level of destruction over here in America, but we did have a takeover of our education system, of the movie theaters, so on and so forth. And, you know, like, the evidence is there. I mean, there's big shots in Hollywood who have talked about what they've tried to do. I mean, big shots in the porn industry that have talked about, you know, that this is directly a racial thing aimed at white women. And when your biggest porn stars are Jews and some trying to defile our culture. And it's been, I mean, that guy over at Harvard, that professor that, you know.
Noel Ignatov.
Yeah, just straight out said that he wants to abolish the white race. And they've cited on every issue they've cited against us since World War II. So, the record's clear. And
the average, what's happened within the Hebrew community is a tremendous amount of infighting because they don't understand why they've tied themselves to this mass. The average Hebrew, who would maybe just be a convert, doesn't really understand why they've taken – that's where the infighting comes in. They're putting pressure on Foxy Foxman, Abe Foxman. They don't understand it. They don't understand why they've taken this all-or-nothing approach.
Right.
And that's what they've done. I wanted to go into and use this as an outlet to go into the question. It's the most important – it's the only question choice that a white rabbit – it's really almost like a divine right. It can't be given, it can't be taken, but every white rabbit listening to this will make this choice. And the mantra brings it out in a unique way. We have to do it in a unique way because race is real. And so what I wanted to do was read the mantra real quick.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everybody. It is said that there is a race problem. They say that this race problem will be solved when the third world pours into every white country and only into white countries. The Netherlands and Belgium are as crowded as Japan or Taiwan. But nobody says Japan or Taiwan will solve the race problem by bringing in millions of third worlders and quote-unquote assimilating with them. Everybody says the final solution to this race problem is for every white country and only white countries to assimilate and intermarry with all these non-white. This race problem would be solved only hundreds of millions of non-blacks were brought into every African country and only into African countries. How long would it take anyone to realize, and I'm not talking about a race problem, I'm talking about the final solution to the black problem. And how long would it take for any sane black man to notice this, and what kind of a psycho black man wouldn't object to this? But if I tell the obvious truth about the ongoing genocide against my race, the white race, liberals and respectable conservatives agree that I'm a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. They say they are anti-racist. What they are is anti-white. And what they are calling for is genocide.
Well, that's exactly right. And unfortunately, you broke up just a hair there when you were talking about the African.
Which part did I break up? I can go over it again.
You're talking about – you know, if you flooded Africa with hundreds of millions of non-Africans, you know, obviously an African would see that as genocide.
Yeah, if you go to the site whiterabbitradio.net, you're going to see the mantra, and you can listen to it again. You're also going to see White Rabbit Genocide, which is the mantra as applied to the white rabbits. It's the same thing. If you go to Bugs, if you go to WhitakerOnline.org, the blog, you're going to see Fighting White Genocide. We don't beat around the bush. This invokes an iron question, and this is the most important question. This is the only question your ancestors have ever answered.
Okay, hang on. Before we get to that, I want to say one more little thing about this mantra here, because when he's talking, this is Bob Whitaker's mantra, and it's simple. I mean, what he just read there is dead simple. It's nothing revolutionary. But I honestly read this mantra, and it took me a couple years to really understand what he's saying there. And the reason why is because we are brainwashed. I don't care, you know, if you say you've been a white nationalist. I mean, I know there's some white nationalists that really have it down, But a lot of us out there that know that this stuff is wrong and that we've got to stand up for our race, we're still heavily under the influence of the sort of thinking that's been crammed down our throats from our TVs and from our schools. And what that he just read, that mantra there, is a different way of thinking about this. It boils everything down to one specific issue, which is that there is people that are doing an ongoing genocide against the white race. And if you think that's an overstatement in any way, think about what he says in that mantra. Nobody is trying to flood Africa with hundreds of millions of non-Africans. Nobody's trying to flood Asia with hundreds of millions of non-Asians. It's only white nations that are being attacked in this manner. And that is genocide. If you're trying to blend humanity in only one place, and that's only where white people live, it's genocide. And it, you know, you've read the definition of genocide by the UN before. That is genocide. And that's what the mantra boils down to. And when you go to his site and you read it, you might want to take it one section at a time because all at once it can be a little overwhelming. But just keep that in mind. It basically breaks it down to genocide. All the other issues out there are just sidetracks. You know, the media will try to call you a white supremacist. Do you think you're better than somebody else? That doesn't have anything to do with it. The only relevant issue is that somebody is trying to genocide us. They might say, well, who is that? Forget that for a second. We are trying to be genocide. So there is a genocide going on. Once they concede that point, we can talk about everything else. But until whoever you're talking to understands and admits that the genocide is occurring against the white race, all the other questions are not relevant.
Yes, and what it does is invoke something subconsciously. You see, race is very real, and we are very unique, so we go about things in a unique way. On my show, I've introduced you to a simple game. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. My issue is singular. The only issue I deal with is loyalty. And this attempt to genocide us, as I said in the first show I did, is obviously a gross disloyalty. And you know, I said that the only rabbits we have problems with are those that look like us, that have no loyalty to us and have power over us, and we call them pink rabbits. Doesn't matter what their ideology is. The question we invoke is a simple question. The question I will ask you is a simple question. The question the mantra goes to the heart of loyalty. Are you pro-white or are you pro-white genocide? It is an iron question. It is unmovable. You must answer the question. Are you pro-white or are you pro-white genocide? At every step along the way, your ancestors have answered, I am pro-white. If one of your ancestors answered it, I am pro-white genocide, well, they took a lower path. Well, our race has never once stood still. We either go higher or they go into some kind of blended rabbit, lower. There is no in-between for us. You must choose. You must make a choice. And that choice is a conscious choice on some level.
But that's the iron
question.
That's why I say this struggle is so deep. Because that question, you nailed it, man. That question is in every action we take in our lives. The music we listen to, the people we decide to associate with, the movies we watch, every action in our life, that question is being answered in every action. Are we pro-white or are we pro-white genocide?
And you can run and hide. You can run anywhere you want on this planet. But on this top of the planet, you're in front of an iron wall. Right in front of you is an iron wall. You're underneath an iron sky. And there's an iron question that's bearing down on all white rabbits. We've always asked this question. This question shapes our existence. This question decides our evolution. You will either be pro-white and go with us or pro-white genocide. Our enemies, the pink rabbits, have chosen pro-white genocide. Those choices have consequences.
They do, and those consequences carry beyond the grave because history will judge you. You know, either you're loyal or you're a traitor. And when I look at, you know, obviously blacks aren't traitors against us. I mean, they're you know, a black has to look out for his own ethnic interests.
They have no power over us. They have the powers they have over us are an illusion. No one listening to this, no one can have their choice taken away from them. It is an iron, it's an iron choice. It's an iron question. It is unmovable. It is divine. 10,000 years from now, we may have to ask it again.
Yeah.
But you must choose. Are you pro-white or are you pro-white genocide? There is no wiggle room. No one can choose for you. Your mommy and daddy can't help you, and they can't hurt you. Your wife can't help you or hurt you in that, but you must choose.
That's exactly right. You know, you can see people that can run and try to hide from this question. You can try to find success in an economic model. You can try to find success in fame. You know, Angelina Jolie can star in a bunch of movies and make a bunch of money, but I can guarantee you that 100 years from now, if anybody remembers her, the only thing she's going to be remembered as a traitor, as a race traitor. And she made that decision. And everything she did, she might have thought that she was making a decision on which movie to choose so that she could get wealthy, or, you know, whether she would be rich or poor. But when it boiled down to every decision she's made in her life, the only relevant decision that she made was to be pro-white or a pro-white genocide, and she chose to be pro-white genocide. She decided to actively oppose her race in you know, the things that she's done in her life, and that's the only thing that will be remembered 100 years from now. It won't be remembered whether you gave charity or whether you were a good mechanic or whether you were nice to your neighbors or, you know, what your grandkids will remember you by, because this race thing is coming to a head. I mean, unless genocide is headed off, genocide will essentially occur within, you know, 50 to 100 years. And so, obviously, things are going to change.
Well, even if you get on a plane, you are making a conscious choice. You're saying, I am pro-white. Our ancestors fled time and time again. They said, I'm pro-white. Others said, I'm pro-white genocide. They browned out. We can do that.
We can, but, you know, I got to say that you don't have to get on a plane to be pro-white. I mean, you don't have to.
No, not at all. But I'm saying you will be faced with this choice, whether you like it or not. This is a choice all white rabbits must make, and they must make it for themselves. There is no room in it.
Right, and my point is, when I'm saying that it lives beyond the grave, is if you ever decide to make the choice for pro-white genocide because you think in some way it will lengthen your life, or that it will cause you to have a better life, that's not relevant. It doesn't really matter whether I die 10 years from now or I die 50 years from now. The date that I die doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is what I lived for. And so, you know, people, I mean, if I get on a plane to go to Russia for the right reasons, because I'm helping build a better place for my children over there, that's the right reason. If I get on the plane for Russia because I am a coward and I don't want to fight, then I've made the wrong choice. And so whether you do white flight or you stay and you fight and die, doesn't really matter as long as you fight, as long as you make that decision to be pro-white.
And let's face it, if you're having little speckly brown rabbit babies, well, you're pro-white genocide.
Exactly.
Yes,
it doesn't matter whether
you're doing it
in Russia or you're doing it in the United States.
It is an iron question, because you must choose. You must choose. And not choosing is not a form of choice. There's not a question of choice. Your actions can speak louder than words. Mr. Abe Foxman from the ADL. Obviously, the Anti-Defamation League at one point in the struggle chose pro-white genocide. My enemies will always choose pro-white genocide. It doesn't matter whether it's programming your local television station. The Pink Rabbits will choose pro-white genocide. It doesn't matter whether it's MTV. It'll be pro-white genocide that they choose. It doesn't matter whether it be your local hardware store. It doesn't matter whether it's a Fortune 500 company. They will always lean it toward our genocide. Time and time again.
That's right.
It doesn't matter whether it's a local Boy Scout charity. It doesn't matter whether it's UNESCO at a global level. They will always try to run it at pro-white genocide. It is their choice.
Well, exactly.
We also have a choice.
Exactly. And I think no matter what, you and I will have always chose to be pro-white. Doesn't matter whether we were born on the West Coast or the East Coast or anywhere in between. That was hardwired into us, just as they're hardwired to be traitors. We're out of time, man. We're hard up against the end here. So thanks for coming on.
No problem. No problem. I look forward to talking with you again.
All right. Take it easy. To the listeners out there, hang tough.
WhiteRabbitRadio.net.
Yeah, WhiteRabbitRadio.net. And until I talk to you guys next time, walk tall, stay proud, and don't give them an inch.